Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Milwaukee Brewers podcast coming back at you, and it's kind of normal time here at the start of the week. The Milwaukee Brewers are opening up a 10-game road trip in a trio of NL Central cities. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and on the other line is Tom Haudricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He watched the end of this homestand in Milwaukee, a couple rough losses to the San Francisco Giants. Kind of an ugly series all the way around when you factor in the losses that the team had because of COVID-19, because of health and safety protocols. Brett Anderson leaves Sunday start after five good innings with an injury. It sounds like he'll be okay, but still, when you factor in the way they lost these games and the Reds playing white hot, Brewers fans are getting a little bit nervous. So, Tom, we'll talk about all that stuff. We'll talk about the Giants games. But really still top of mind, and we talked about this on the last podcast, is available bodies. The COVID-19 thing did not slow down. Since we last chatted, two starting pitchers, Adrian Hauser and Eric Lauer, both placed on the COVID-19 IL list, putting the Brewers kind of behind the eight ball. Now, there's some weather factoring in here in Chicago this week that might push some games around, and that is also something to be concerned about. And they do get some of their relievers back this week, in theory. But who's going to pitch these games, Tom? I have no idea who's going to start on Tuesday, for example. It's kind of all up in the air.
Well, we loved when the Brewers put their notes out Sunday for the final game of that San Francisco series. We love that they always give us the pitching probables for the next series. The pitching probables for the next series said four games in Chicago: Monday TBA versus TBA, Tuesday TBA versus TBA, Wednesday TBA versus TBA, Thursday TBA versus TBA. TBA is going to be worn out on both sides.
This is like old Hoss Radborn pitching back in the day, just game after game after game.
Yeah, so I don't know why the Cubs don't know who their pitchers are, but I do know why the Brewers don't know who their pitchers are. And then we were told by the end of the day Sunday that Freddie Peralta would start on Monday. That's a little noteworthy in that he's going to start on 4 days rest, which used to be common in baseball, but not this year for the Brewers. And I'm not even sure he started any games on 4 days rest this year. So that's interesting in itself, but also indicative of what's going on with the Brewers right now. They're down 2.5 starters right now, the two being Eric Lauer and Hauser, who are on the COVID IL. And then we'll just give Anderson a half because he left with cramping yesterday that they hope is not going to be, messing up his next start, but we'll see. But and then the bullpen greatly affected. All bullpens are built from the back forward, unlike everything else in life, which is built from the forward to the back. Bullpens are built from the back forward. So once Hader went down, it was going to get messy because he no longer had the ninth, which meant Williams no longer had the eighth, which meant Boxberger no longer had the seventh, which meant Suter no longer had the sixth. It just messed up everything. And then, some of their really other effective relievers like Strickland and Cousins being gone on COVID as well. So, I think it affected how outcomes of those last two games went. All Avisail Garcia has to do is catch a ball in the ninth inning on the warning track Saturday night, and Brent Suter gets his first major league save.
Right.
Instead, he's now still looking for his first major league save. So that was unfortunate. The combination of their pitching being messed up and them making some uncharacteristic mistakes in the field, led to those two losses. One of the runs yesterday scored because Luis Urias made a throwing error from shortstop. Well, he hadn't made any since May because they hadn't let him play shortstop since May. So it's just, and as counsel noted after the game Sunday, when you're playing the best team in the league and all the games are one-run games, every mistake is magnified, and that's what they found out. And so it hasn't helped also that the two new guys, Norris and Curtis, have struggled, because they were going to pitch no matter what. Them pitching is not because of COVID. They traded for those guys, and they're supposed to be getting outs in the middle of games, and they've had trouble doing it although Curtis has been kind of ambushed by his defense a little bit. So they've just got a lot of little blips on their radar screen right now. Some of them not so little. And this is really the first time that they've dealt. You know, they had all those injuries early in the year that they got through, but this is a whole different thing. You know, COVID, you know, you're on for at least 10 days, but that doesn't mean you're coming off in 10 days. You got to, you know, get some negative test in there as well. So, you know, back to the original thing about the pitching for Chicago, we know Freddie, you know, I strongly suspect we're going to see Aaron Ashby on Tuesday. It's his day to pitch in Nashville. And his last time out, his pitching line was 6-1-0-0-1-11.
Yeah. And he saw the Cubs earlier this year. It did not go well, but you got to think those first game jitters are essentially out of the way. And
well, he's different. He's different, and they're different.
Yeah, that's for sure. That is for sure.
This is a different bunch of Cubs. This is the team formerly known as the Iowa Cubs.
Yeah, definitely. This is a different ballgame. The Cubs have lost a bunch. They got swept, I believe, by the White Sox. I think they've lost 6 of 7 or something along those lines. So the Brewers going to Chicago is not all that uncomfortable given the situation that the Cubs are in right now, having traded their three keystone players and among others. So the Brewers probably don't feel too bad about hitting the road. On the other hand, you know, there are a couple ways to look at this last series against the Giants. You could say, well, they were right there. All three of those games are hyper-competitive. They all come down to a play here or there against, like you said, the best team in baseball without their top relievers and Christian Yelich for the most part and a few other guys. So you could say that. On the other hand, man, it would have been nice to have won a series there when all the bullpen maneuvering worked. Brent Suter got a fly ball that should have ended a game. And obviously, El Garcia with an error that I think, you know, could be one of the more, you know, poignant moments in this Brewers season if things go south from here. The loss on Sunday sort of is compounded by what happened on Saturday. You lose a 2-run lead late, that looks bad, but like you said, that's Daniel Norris, John Curtis, guys that the Brewers are going to be relying on. It's not as if, you know, plan D was in the game and gave up runs that wouldn't have otherwise been allowed, so that's a little frustrating.
And it is, and if Garcia catches the ball Saturday night, then you say you've won the series, and yesterday you don't get that upset about it.
Of course.
But it's like one compounded the other. You know, and so, but I will tell you one thing. I wondered how the Giants were doing this with all these old guys that were supposedly washed up, and how they were building this tremendous record they have. And now I know why. And assuming, you know, they don't have guys get hurt or go south on them, because older players, you know, there is a little bit of risk there. Their at bats are just unbelievable.
Totally.
Unbelievable. Yeah. That Tommy La Stella at bat Sunday against Boxberger, 11 pitches, fouled off. It started 0-2. It's how many hitters go to 11 pitches when the count starts 0-2? A lot of them don't make it past 3 pitches. and then Crawford, you know, fought off a good pitch and dunked it into, you know, just over the third baseman's head for a double. But when watching their at bats, now I do get it. You know, Brandon Woodruff had to work his butt off Saturday to only give up 1 run in 6 innings. You know what? Every single guy was just battling him like crazy. I thought it was one of his most impressive outings of the year because of the way they battled him, and he only gave up 1 run in 6 innings. And that's what made that loss even more painful. You know, they're wasting way too many of Woodruff's outings. They've lost 5 of his last 6 outings. And that's, you go back and look, it ain't his fault.
No, that's been a sort of a thread throughout the season. They get these, you know, they managed to win all of Adrian Hauser's games for some reason. And Brett Anderson caught fire, and that's great. But, you know, you've got Cy Young candidates, legitimate Cy Young candidates in Brandon Woodruff, Corbin Burns, and there are stretches throughout the year where, you know, they weren't winning those games, at least not consistently enough based on what they were giving you. Yes, the Brewers are pretty good at making long at bats too. They do make things tough on pitchers, and we've seen that as well. Roddy Tellez has been a good example. He, especially in that home run he hit to win the game against the Pirates to close that series, but also He had the big hit on Friday night. I mean, he's a guy who sees a lot of pitches. The Brewers are doing their job there. It's just, yeah, it would have been nice to if Garcia catches the ball. This is also a good defensive team. And it's notable yes. that the Garcia drop and then the Arias play the following day, which ends up allowing a run to score in a one-run game. I mean, those are outliers. The Brewers are doing their job defensively.
Yes, they have been a good defensive team. You wouldn't know it from the last two games, although it's not like they made 10 errors. They just made some really bad ones. But I think I'll have to go back and look. Their outfield defense has been outstanding this year. I think they have like 5 or 6 errors from the entire outfield for the whole season. You know what? They just have not hurt themselves on defense. They're number one in the major leagues in defensive runs saved. So, you know, they might make an occasional bad error, but then they make a bunch of great plays that save runs all the time, you know. So it's just unfortunate, just really bad timing. Just a lot of, just, you know, if you believe in karma, just, you know, the last 48 hours, it's been a lot of bad karma for them. Just enough mistakes to lose to a really good team and then being depleted by COVID, you know. So we'll see. You know, they do hope to get some of these guys back. I do think we'll know a lot more about them next weekend because some of their guys will be back by then, and that should help. And we'll see how they do in these four games in Chicago when they are still depleted. Like you mentioned the rain. Anybody that's looking out their window today, I think they're seeing the same thing in Chicago that we're seeing here in Milwaukee. So, and if they do play some doubleheaders, because this is their last time in Chicago, so they got to play these games. If they do play some doubleheaders, it'll be interesting to see whether that turns out to be a bad thing or a good thing.
Right, yeah. If you lose a couple games here, it's a good thing because now your relievers can get back off of the COVID list. But if you have to play
a couple of games, not losing them.
You right, if they get washed out, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you have to play a doubleheader Tuesday, well, now your bullpen's going to be extra taxed.
Right. So, you know, I don't have my crystal ball. It's in a drawer somewhere where I can't find it. So we don't know. But it might help them to play 2 less innings for a couple of games, you know what?
That's a good point, too, yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, the Mets have played like, you know, 20 doubleheaders this year, some stupid number. And so they played like 40 less innings than the rest of their division, but it hasn't helped them lately.
Speaking of the Mets, I'll take a couple sort of side detours here. I had alluded to this on the last podcast. The Mets lost the NL East lead to the Phillies over the weekend. That was another big series, but the Brewers now have seen all of the NL West teams, and obviously this Giants series was what it was, but they fared very well against San Diego and Los Angeles against the Dodgers in a 4-game series earlier this year. They won 3 of 4. Yeah. I think conventional wisdom might tell you that the Brewers would rather be the 2 seed. They were flirting with, before losing 2 or 3 of the Giants, the best record in the National League, but that would guarantee you the wild card opponent, and that right now is looking like it's going to be two NL West teams. Possibly, at this point, it'd be San Diego and Los Angeles, but I don't know if the Brewers would rather, I think they'd probably rather mess with the NL East winner, whether that be the Phillies or the Mets, or even the Braves. So they probably, I don't know, like, you always get into when these scenarios pop up, it's always like, be careful what you wished for or whatever, but I don't know, I'd rather face the NL East if I'm the Brewers, right?
Well, you know, let's say that the teams that are currently in the picture are the teams in the picture at the end. If you're the number 2 seed, you can let the NL West teams devour themselves, you know what? They would have to play each other for the wild card, and then the winner of that would play the Giants.
Right.
You know, so just let them devour themselves, you know. And if that's the way it played out, 2 of the 3 best teams would just be gone, you know, by the time you get to the second round. So being the number 2 seed right now doesn't look that bad, you know. It would theoretically, you'd be playing the worst team, other playoff team, the NL East winner, right?
Absolutely, so, yep.
Yeah, and plus you get to come home and play, you know. So, yeah, if they end up being the number 2 seed and it ends up being 2 wild cards from the West plus the best team, just let them cannibalize each other.
Right.
You know, and see who comes out of that. That'd be a heck of a dogfight. You know, if they end up with the three best teams or three of the best teams, then only one of them makes it to the finals. It's going to help the rest of the team. So, and you have to assume the East teams are going to have a dogfight to the very end. You know, so it's not like they'd be able to line their pitching up the way they want to for the playoffs either. So we'll see. The Reds are going to have something to say about this. You know,
absolutely.
The Brewers fans don't want to look at the comparative schedules in September. I'll tell you that right now. It's greatly favors the Reds. The Reds have 9 of their last 18 games against the Pirates. And the last time I checked, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and certainly that's the fly in the ointment. And the reason maybe this Giants series led to some greater exasperation is the fact that the Reds just crushed the Pirates in a 4-game sweep. The fourth game was competitive, but for the most part, the Reds dominated that series. They won 5 in a row, 10 of 12. And the Brewers have been hot at the same time, so the lead was still pretty chunky in the NL Central. It's down now to 5 games. And like you said, the Reds, and it isn't even just... it isn't really. I mean, they got a bunch of games against the Marlins, which isn't one of the better teams, obviously, left out there. They've still got plenty of other, you know, games against the Cubs and Cardinals too. Those and the Brewers have those as well. But those Pirates games, the Brewers are going to be done with the Pirates.
And the reason I say, Jared, that we'll know a lot more at the end of the week. I'm pretty sure the Reds are playing at Atlanta and at Philadelphia this week, correct?
Yes.
Does that sound right?
Yep. They got a 1-game remake against Cleveland on Monday, but then yes, Atlanta and Philly.
On the road, right? So, So they, although the Reds have a fairly easy finishing schedule, they have a tough week, it looks like, right now. So let's see what the COVID Brewers get to Sunday with for a record and what the Reds get to Sunday with for a record after playing at Atlanta and at Philly. Two teams that are really hot right now. So, and the Reds obviously are as well. So there's some real momentum teams playing each other in those two series right now because Atlanta's been hot. The Phillies are red hot. But so are the Reds, you know, the Reds. One thing that was frustrating until the last 48 hours for the Reds is every time they won, the Brewers won.
That was crazy. Yeah, like 9-4, I think the two teams were over the last, you know, basically 2 weeks of baseball. If they played on the same day, they had the same result. It was wild.
And that's another reason why those two Brewers losses hurt. If they would have just won one of them, they'd be 6 ahead instead of 5.
The Reds are white hot, but the Brewers do see them here later this month. There will be a 3-game series at American Family Field. That could be a big test after this 10-game road trip. So, yeah. If you look at FanGraphs, take or leave playoff odds or whatever, they went from 96% before those two losses to 93, essentially 93. So from a national perspective, most people still think the NL Central is over. I mean, Milwaukee fans are going to be nervous, of course, but, you know, it still very much favors Milwaukee just by virtue of numbers and the history of baseball. So that's right. Also something to keep in mind.
Yeah, would you rather be in the Red spot or the Brewer spot? You'd rather be in the Brewer spot. Right now, the Brewers are the classic, for me, half glass, half empty team. Depends on which one you are.
Yes.
If you're a half full person, you're liking the Brewers right now.
Yeah.
If you're a half empty person, you're nervous as heck.
Yep. There's still 20 games.
But that's kind of the way. That's the kind of the way you are all the time if you're half empty versus half full.
I think Milwaukee sports in general, until recently, had taught us, you know, there's always like another obstacle right around the corner. But hey, we're in the aftermath of a Bucks championship. Anything can happen here. We got to relax. There's still 20 over 500. Very good spot. I'm gonna take another quick side detour. Going back to that Garcia error. Originally, it was ruled an error. And then it was called a triple, and then it was ruled back into an error. I'm just curious your thoughts on that. I do not want to make this a disparaging thing against official scores or these official scores, because we both know Tim O'Driscoll or Drew Olsen or whoever's doing the games very well, and I know they work really hard and they take it very seriously. What is your understanding of what an error is? I know a lot of people feel like, well, if the ball doesn't touch your glove, it can't be an error, but I don't believe that's true. So right. That was kind of a wild sort of series of circumstances.
So I'm actually not sure it was originally changed from an E9 to a triple. I think it was called a triple by Tim O'Driscoll after some deliberation, but we all just figured it was an E9.
Got it. Okay.
And it got put out there. So I was covering the game. I don't think he announced it in the press box as an E9. I think I announced it as one. The TV announced it as one. Radio announced it as one. But I think Tim was still looking at it. And when he did call it a triple, I actually think Tim O'Driscoll is an excellent scorer. And because he's so neutral to the Brewers, people hate him because they see all the hometown scoring in the other places. And they say, why don't the Brewers get it? Well, he actually tries to do it right and not just be the hometown scorer. So I'm not sure he did change it originally, but he did change it from a triple to an E9 by Sunday morning. And I know he agonized over it and looked at it a million times. And I went over and asked him why he called it a triple. And he told me he thought that Garcia got hung up on the padding on the wall, was actually got pinned against the wall. And then my suggestion to him on that was, well, he sort of did that to himself by not by not taking a good route to the ball. You know, he correctly went back to the wall quickly, but not to the spot where the ball was, you know. So I don't know if he took his eye off of it or he just didn't see it. So Tim thought he saw it all the way, and then the ball then kind of got trapped against. It is some goofy things going on with that wall out there. It's like some padding, but also some screen because some people sit out there and they want to be able to see it. So it is a little bit different out there. But Tim, I talked to him the next morning, and he said he went back and looked, and he said he thought Garcia did not see the ball all the way. But then he said when he looked at some replays that he thought he had seen it. So he just decided that Garcia did some things wrong enough to call it an error. And I think error versus triple, I think most people do fall on the side of error than triple. So I think he was hearing way more flack when he called it a triple than he was an error. But that's not why he changed it. He's used to catching flack. Scorers catch flack all the time. But I do think it was just misplayed by Garcia. He just didn't go to the right spot. You know, he got back fast. And then he tried to adjust. And I do think he got hung up in that kind of goofy padding out there, but it's because he made a mistake. And you know, I say, if you step in a gopher hole, don't blame the gopher.
Right. You know? Yeah. Well, for me, it calls to mind similar situations when a player loses the ball in the lights or in the sun. Like,
right. Like
let's say they do that and it hits their glove and falls off. Like, how to what degree do you say those were circumstances beyond his control? And, you know, if it hits his glove, right, to what degree do you say, well, he should have caught it anyway? You know, like, there's a lot of it's hard to get inside the head of a fielder and know exactly, like, what they screwed up was because of something maybe outside their control or unusual. And then what can you say? Well, what's normal human effort to make that play? Normal MLB effort. Should that be an error? It's tough. I wouldn't want the job. I would listen if people wanted to discuss the idea of doing away with earned runs altogether and errors and whatnot. I think it maybe is too gray area of a science, but you know, this is how it's been for many, many years.
Well, we because of COVID, we don't have clubhouse access, and he was not brought into the Zoom room, even though he was asked. So then Sunday there was no access because it was family day for the players out there with their kids and stuff. So we had no Zooms and no club. So we have not got to ask Garcia what he was thinking and what happened. So maybe at some point down the line we will. We can maybe catch him out on the field during field access. Today rain's going to probably be a factor in access. We just haven't got to ask him. So I don't know. We asked counsel what he thought happened. We asked some other guys what they thought happened. So just an unfortunate play. You know, the second guessers want to go, well, why was it Jackie Bradley Jr.?
Oh, yeah, that's super weird.
Yeah, just dumb commentary because, Garcia made some really good plays in that game,
including in that inning on a screamer that Suter had
over
served
his
up.
head. A lot of guys would have missed that ball.
Yep.
So
yeah, and with his arm, you just can't, I mean, heck, if there's a guy on first, that's the guy you want in there playing deep so that he can throw the guy out at the plate if he has to.
Right. So there's no perfect fielder in history. Nobody never made an error. So just unfortunate. I can tell you that other than Brant Brown, I don't remember an outfielder missing a ball for the last out of the game. I just don't remember it.
Yeah. Brown sticks out because it allowed, I think, 3 runs to score.
Yeah, it was bases loaded, 3 runs scored, But I haven't, I've been covering the Brewers for 35 years. I don't remember an outfielder missing a fly ball on the final out of the game that made the difference between winning or losing. I don't remember it, So maybe it happened. So I remember that crazy ball that Braun hit against the Tigers a couple of years ago when Brewers were fighting for the wild card, and it went off the guy's glove and rolled along the top of the padding for about 10 feet and then fell over for a home run.
Yeah, that was Nick Castellanos with the Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah, but it was, it wasn't missed for an error. It went off his glove, rolled along the top of the wall, and went over. And that was favorable to the Brewers, but I really don't remember an outfield E on the last out of the game that stopped the Brewers from winning. That was the first one I can remember. You do a way better job than I do of going back and looking at stuff from archives, but I just use my own anecdotal terrible brain memory, and I don't remember it.
Yeah, I'm sure there have been walk-off errors and whatnot, but that was a tough one, and I'm sure Brewers fans hopeful that's not a turning point in this season. Again, they do still have some light matchups ahead, some on the road, but this 4-game series against the Chicago Cubs, again, that is not a team playing its best baseball or in its best space. So
and let me throw in that, so after that happened, the Giants scored 3 runs in the top of the 10th, and just and against all odds, and I'll say against all friggin' odds, the Brewers hit 2 home runs in the bottom of that inning.
Incredible. With Willy Adames' clutch game tying, one more Willy Adames moment that we would have, we can add it anyway to the highlight reel. It didn't end up in a win, but still, the guy, just, my goodness.
And then I think maybe Garcia came up after that. And can you imagine if he would have hit a home run?
I did. Yeah, I said that on Twitter. I said, look, if he homers here, it's just a team of destiny. You just have to accept it and ride with it, because that's incredible if that's how
but
it works.
But so we had just a few more moments of just absolute bat poop craziness.
Yeah. Before I let you go, Tom, anything else that you wanted to throw in? I mean, you did mention Curtis and Norris. They've been up and down so far. Very small samples, but a couple rough, a few rough outings. Defense has not done them favors. Anything else you wanted to touch on?
No, I mean, like I said, we're going to know a lot more by the next time we do a podcast, because let's just, the Brewers have just had so many obstacles and they just continue to have them. And let's just see who the heck pitches the rest of this week. It's just, I'm not so sure that losing the two starters isn't going to be more damaging than losing those relievers, because the starting pitching is what's just carried this team, And so, say what you want about the big three. Those other three guys have been really good lately, Lauer, Hauser, and Anderson, really good.
Absolutely.
So without them, let's see what happens.
If the Brewers do get Strickland, Cousins, and Hader eventually back in this Cubs series, depending on their health and depending on how ready they are, they could theoretically go bullpen game maybe in that Pirates series. This is going to be a little touch and go here until they can fill out those spots in the rotation.
It's fluid. We've got some fluid stuff. There's some guys on the team right now that ain't going to be on the team in a couple of days.
Right. Yes. This whole roster is, Sal Romano, I mean, rough first outing. He deserves a second shot. I don't know if he's going to get it, because there's so many other guys who are going to be ready to come back, but we'll see.
And I think we've talked about it because we did a podcast Thursday, but the unfairness of the Axford thing is just so sad. It's just ridiculously sad what happened there, So, I mean, just this, can a pitching staff be any more fluid than this one right now? No, it cannot. Well, it better not. I mean, you know, they're so lucky the COVID stuff has not bled into the position player group, but that doesn't mean it won't.
This team is, Tom, is going to win the World Series, and they're going to have to manufacture, like, they're going to have to find their own mine for all of the precious metals to make the rings. There's going to be 75 people who get a ring for playing a game with the Milwaukee Brewers this year. It's nuts, the number of people that they've been cycling through.
It's, yeah, 58. What are we up to, 58 or 59?
I think we're 59 now, but I don't know. I
can't keep track. And that's probably not, that number is not finite yet, you know, so.
He is Tom Hondrecourt. Find everything he has at jsonline.com, covering the Milwaukee Brewers. Four games in Chicago, weather permitting, to open the week. Then three games at Pittsburgh. Always weather permitting when you go to Pittsburgh to close out the weekend. And then they come back three games in St. Louis to start the following week after a Monday off day. Thanks for joining us, Tom. We will chat with you again next week.
All right. Thanks, JR.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. Thanks for tuning in to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers Podcast. My name again is JR Radcliffe. For Tom Hondrecourt, thanks for tuning in. We'll chat with you again next week. Bye-bye.